we seem to have encountered a man who has extraordinary luck at the Umgullion Blob races. 3PO handed a hard copy printout of the winning statistics to Leia, but she passed it on to Lando. You're better trained to understand this than I am. Lando took the page of figures and stared at them. He didn't appear to know what he was looking for. 3PO added his own commentary. If it is displayed only as wins and losses, Mr. Timmo's record shows nothing out of the ordinary. But when I had R2 plot the magnitude of wins, you will note that while Mr. Timmo loses quite often in minor races, in every instance when he bets more than 100 credits on a particular blob, that blob wins the race. Lando tapped the sheet of numbers. He's right. This is pretty unusual. I've never seen the Umgullion Blob races myself, and I'm no expert in the nuances, but I'm inclined to say that these odds are next to impossible. This is exactly the sort of thing Master Luke asked us to look for. 3PO moved his arms up and down, whirring the servo motors until they whined in protest. Do you think Mr. Timmo could be a potential Jedi for Master Luke's academy? Lando looked at Leia with questions in his eyes. He had obviously not heard of Luke's recent speech. But Leia's eyes sparkled. Someone needs to check this out. If it's just a scam, we need a person who knows his way around gambling establishments. Lando, isn't that a job you could do? She knew his answer before she even asked the question. 7. The cracked and gasping wasteland of Kessel always made Maruth Duel hungry. Staring out the landscape window, Duel's mechanical eye focused to the far distance. Kessel's surface was whitish and powdery, with a few hardy transplanted weeds trying to survive in the crevices. Great plumes from the atmosphere factories gushed into the pinkish sky in a losing battle against the weak gravity. Unseen radiation from the maw crackled against the atmospheric shields. The garrison moon housing Kessel's defense fleet was just setting on the horizon. Duel turned from the window and went to an alcove in the former warden's office. Time for a snack. He withdrew a cage of fat and juicy flying insects, pressing his face close to the mesh so he could see better with his dim eyesight. The insects had 10 legs, iridescent body cases, and succulent abdomens. They panicked the moment he moved the cage. Duel wrapped spongy fingers on the mesh, stirring them up. The insects flew around the confined space in a frenzy. Somehow, terror released a hormone that made their meat sweeter. He licked his swollen, ribet lips. Opening the mesh door, Duel thrust his entire head into the cage. The insects fluttered around his eyes, his ears, his cheeks. Duel's sharp tongue shot out again and again, spearing the insects and slurping them into his mouth. He snapped up 3 more, then paused to swallow. Their squirming legs tickled the inside of his mouth. Giving a sigh of pleasure, Duel lapped up another pair. One insect flew directly into his open mouth, and Duel swallowed it whole. Someone knocked on his door and marched in before he could respond. Wearing the insect cage over his head, Duel turned around to see Skink's necks, his gangly arms and legs jittering. "I have a report, Maruth." Duel extricated his head from the insect cage, then sealed the opening. 3 bugs managed to escape and flew to the wide picture window, flinging themselves against the transperisteel. Duel decided to catch them later.
"Yes? What is it?"
"We have finished overhauling the Millennium Falcon. All identifying marks are removed, replaced with fake serial numbers. We made a few other modifications in addition to the regular repairs it needed. With your permission, I'll have it flown up to the Garrison Moon, where it can be incorporated into our space navy. Light freighters aren't the best warships, but with a good pilot, they can still cause plenty of damage. And the Falcon is closer to a fighter than a freighter." Duel nodded.
"Good, good. What about our work on the energy shield generators? I want them functional as soon as possible, just in case the New Republic comes after us."
"Our engineers on the moon base think they can reroute the circuits, so we won't need all the parts we're missing. Kessel will be impregnable before long." Duel's single eye lit up with eagerness.
"Have Han Solo and his Wookiee gone into the mines yet?"
Skink's necks tapped his fingertips together.
"I've reserved an armored personnel transport and will make the delivery personally within the hour."
He fingered his double blaster.
If they try anything, I want to be the one to deal with it. Duel smiled.
I look forward to them rotting in the dark.
He waved his splayed hands.
Well, what are you waiting for?
Moving with his jerky walk, Skink's next left the warden's chambers. Duel smiled at the thought of his revenge on Solo, but uneasiness tugged at him. The New Republic seemed far away and insignificant, but from his scan of Han's mind, he knew the magnitude of firepower that could be directed against him. Not since Duel had taken over the prison facilities from Kessel's upstart slave lords had he felt such impending doom. Under the old system, it had been so much simpler. By blackmailing or paying off prison guards, Duel had managed to set himself up as a kingpin of spice smuggling right under the Empire's nose. He sold maps and access codes for Kessel's energy shield, fostering small-time spice operations on other parts of the planet. Hapless entrepreneurs would work their new mines, then sell the product in secret to Duel. Once the spice veins began to play out, Duel, acting as a loyal prison official, would discover the illicit operation and report it to his Imperial contact. When Imperial troops raided those illegal mines, Duel's hand-picked guards made certain that anyone who could point a finger at Duel never survived capture. The other helpless lackeys would be put to work in the primary mines. It was a win-win situation for Duel. During the prison revolt, Duel targeted his primary rivals and made the toughest guards go after the worst smugglers until they slaughtered each other. This left Maruth Duel in charge, with Skink's Necks as his right-hand man. Duel had captured the warden, sending him to work in the spice mines until he was broken. Then, for the entertainment value, Duel had planted spice grubs in his body. As the grubs chewed up his insides, the warden had gone through marvelously theatrical convulsions, in the middle of which Duel encased him in carbonite, using freezing equipment that had once been used to prepare violent and dangerous prisoners for transport. Reminiscing always aroused him. Reaching into a drawer of his desk, Duel withdrew the bright yellow cravat that signified his readiness to mate. He secured it in place, then drew in a long, hissing breath as he refocused his mechanical eye and glanced at his reflection. Irresistible. Duel rubbed his palms along his ribs to straighten the lizard skin waistcoat, then strutted out of his office down the corridor. He entered the secure wing, keying in the access code that only he knew. Then he sucked in a deep breath. Flicking his tongue in and out, he could pick up the pheromones from the air. Inside their cubicle cells, the captive Rybet females huddled in the corners, trying to hide in the shadows. Duel's yellow cravat seemed very bright in the dimness. Alone on Kessel, Maruth Duel had been frustrated for many years, but now that he ran the planet, he could afford to have dozens of female slaves shipped from his homeworld. Sometimes the females did not cooperate, but after years of working in the correctional facility, Duel had plenty of experience in dealing with unruly prisoners. Lately, his only difficulty had been in choosing among the females. As he sauntered down the narrow corridor, setting his mechanical eye to high focus and peering into the cells, Maruth Duel's writhing lips formed a huge, lustful smile. Kessel's landscape rushed beneath the armored prisoner transport. Han Solo could see only a narrow strip through the window slits in the prisoner's compartment. He and Chewie had been strapped into their seats and linked to resistance feedback electrodes that would knock them unconscious if they struggled too much. Chewbacca had even more trouble with the full body restraint than he had with the stun cuffs. Skink's Necks hunched over the pilot controls, circling the transport away from the battlements of the Imperial Correction Facility. An armored guard sat in the co-pilot seat, directing his blaster rifle toward Han and Chewie.
"Hey, how about pointing out some of the landmarks, Skink's Necks?" Han said. "What kind of tour is this, anyway?"
"Shut up, Solo," Skink's Necks said.
"Why should I? I bought a full-price ticket."
Skink's Necks sent a painful jolt through the restraining electrodes. Chewbacca roared. Han muttered,
"There goes your tip, Skink's Necks."
The Scarecrow guided the transport around a huge open pit that plunged deep into the ground. Rusted girders and support structures stood like skeletal fingers propped up in the whitish barrens. It took Han a moment to realize this was a shaft bored into the crust by the giant atmosphere factories, chewing through the rocks and dissolving out oxygen and carbon dioxide to replenish the constantly fading air. After the huge factory had sucked out the viable breathing gases, it had left access to an entire network of underground tunnels for spice mining. Skinks next set the prisoner transport down on the rocky ground and fitted a breath mask over his nose and mouth. He gave another mask to the guard.
"What about us?" Hans said. "You won't be out very long," Skinks next said. "A little lightheadedness will do you good."
Punching a button on the control panel, Skinks next released their restraints. Hans stretched his sore arms. Instantly, the guard snapped up his rifle, and Skinks next whipped out his modified double blaster, both pointing the deadly barrels directly at Han. Han froze.
"Just stretching. It's okay. Calm down."
When Skinks next opened the side door to the transport vehicle, Han felt his ears pop. Moist air flashed into white vapor, wafting into the rarefied atmosphere next to the open pit. Han felt oxygen being stolen from his lungs. Instinctively, he drew in a deep breath, but that helped little. He and Chewbacca stumbled out of the craft as Skinks next and the guard prodded them. At the rim of the crater, they found an elevator cage on tracks that plunged deep into the pit. Skinks next seemed to be moving with deliberate slowness. Unable to breathe, Han tried to hurry, stumbling into the elevator cage and gesturing Chewbacca after him. He gasped and wheezed. Black spots began to appear in front of his eyes. When he did manage to breathe an entire lungful of the thin air, the cold of Kessel bit into his chest.
"A few years ago, we had the atmosphere factories running full tilt," Skinks next said, his words muffled behind the face mask. "Duel figured it was a frivolous waste of energy."
The guard shut the wire mesh door, and Skinks next operated the elevator controls. The cage descended at a rapid clip until the window of sky shrank to a small spot of blue light high above. They saw openings into the rock wall sealed off with steel doors. At each level, a ring of light encircled the pit, but many of the illuminators had either burned out or been broken. Chewbacca hung onto the bars of the elevator with long, hairy arms, panting for air. His pink tongue protruded, turning purplish from lack of oxygen. Han, shivering and dizzy and starved for breath, slumped to the bottom of the elevator. When the elevator abruptly stopped, the jolt slammed Han's head into the mesh. As he looked down through the open cage floor, he saw the pit continuing immeasurably far below them.
"Get up," Skinks next said, kicking him. "No time to sleep. Come on, you'll get a breath of fresh air inside."
With some help from Skinks next, Han managed to haul himself to his feet. The smaller guard had much more difficulty manhandling Chewbacca forward. Opening the gate of the elevator, they had access to one of the sealed metal doors. Skinks next cranked the hatch, and all four of them staggered into a small tiled chamber. Han could barely see anymore. His ears buzzed. His eyesight was a mixture of black specks, roaring blood, and dim shadows of the objects around him. But as soon as Skinks next sealed the door, glorious oxygen flooded the chamber. Before the captives could recover, the guard shoved the barrel of his blaster rifle under Chewbacca's chin, and Skinks next held his own weapon against Han's head.
"Almost there," Skinks next said. "No funny stuff now."
Han, happy just to be breathing again, couldn't dream of doing anything. At least, not yet. On the other side of the airlock was a large muster room filled with lethargic-looking workers ready to begin their shift in the spice mines. The muster room had been blasted out of solid rock, and a tall bank of bunks ran along one side of the room. An empty eating section with long tables took up the central area. Cameras stared down at the activity from perches on the walls. Guards in hodgepodge stormtrooper uniforms waited behind screens in the control rooms. Other guards kept an eye on the people moving about in the muster area. All the workers looked pale and haggard, as if they had been underground and underfed for years. A burly man strode up to meet them, keeping his eyes fixed on Skinks next. The man had a lumpy face, a lumpy chin covered with bristly black stubble, and lumpy arms, as if his massive muscles had all been attached at the wrong places.
"You brought me two more?" the man said. "Only two? That's not enough."
He reached out to grab Chewbacca's hairy arm. Chewbacca roared and flinched away, but the lumpy man didn't notice.
"Well, the Wookiee's worth three men, but I don't know about the other one. This doesn't take care of half the people I've lost."
Skinks next glowered at him. "So stop losing people," he said with a voice of ice, then nudged Han.
This is Boss Roke. He's in charge of breaking you. He gets extra points with Maruth Duel to make your life miserable.
He doesn't seem to be doing a very good job of keeping track of his workers, Han said.
Roke flashed him a withering glare. Something's taking my men down in the deep tunnels. I've had two more missing since yesterday. They vanished without a trace. No locators, nothing.
Han shrugged. It's hard to get good help these days.
Skink's next pulled out his double blaster and shoved it in Han's face again, but he spoke to Boss Roke.
Get thermal suits for these two. We'll watch them while they get into uniform.
Roke snapped his fingers, and two guards went rummaging through some cubicles.
The human won't be difficult, but the Wookiee, we don't carry much in that size.
In the end, the guard found a large, misshapen suit that had once been worn by some alien creature that had three arms, but it fit Chewbacca well enough after they sealed off the third arm. The empty sleeve and glove dangled down his chest. A heater pack between the shoulder blades powered the whole thing to keep them warm down in the frigid mine tunnels. Han was relieved to see a small breath mask attached to the suit. Skink's next backed toward the elevator. The guard had already entered the airlock chamber. One last time, as if he felt he hadn't used enough tiresome threats for one afternoon, Skink's next pointed the double blaster at Han.
Next time, maybe Maruth will let me use this.
If you clean up your room without being told, and if you eat all your vegetables, Han taunted, then he might let you have a special treat.
Shift Alpha, ready for work detail.
Boss Roke bellowed into the muster room, and dozens of weary people shuffled to squares painted on the floor. Roke pointed to two empty squares.
You two, positions 18 and 19, now.
What? No new employee orientation? Han asked.
With a sadistic grin on his face, Boss Roke shoved him toward the squares.
It's on-the-job training.
At some unspoken signal, the workers mounted breath masks on their faces. Seeing this, Han and Chewbacca followed suit. A big metal door on the far side of the wall slid open to reveal an illuminated chamber 100 meters long, in which floated a centipede-like mine transport of little cars linked together by magnetic attractors. A high-pitched tone pinged through hidden speakers, and the workers took their seats on one of the floating mine cars. As people climbed aboard, the separate sections of the cars swayed back and forth.